Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I love that there's, I think it's a quote somewhere where someone was like, technically the bee shouldn't be able to fly, but it does it anyway because it doesn't know that it shouldn't be able to, or something like that. And I respect that.
Is it Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? No, maybe? It's Bee Movie.
No, Bee Movie.
Hello, my name is Ruby Innes, and welcome to Pocket Buds, a back pocket podcast where I talk to my best buds about video games and stuff. Today, we're talking about death. Well, that's a bit morbid, isn't it? To be specific, we're talking about death in video games. The video game world is no stranger to the topic of death. In fact, it's a must-have feature for quite a lot of them. I'm sure any one of you listening would be able to remember a particularly infuriating time you've died in a video game. I'll go first. When I played Paper Mario 64 on the Nintendo Switch Online service, I had a multiple-hour play session where I foolishly wasn't saving as much as I should have. I found myself face to face with a pretty tough mini-boss. I decided to use Watt as my sidekick. He's the little electricity guy. But alas, I died. A very old bug managed to stay in the American version of the emulated game, and that ended up crashing my entire game, resulting in me losing hours of progress. That is one death I'll never forget, and I actually haven't gone back to that game since. But that's just dying in a game. How about death as a game mechanic? As a punishment? As a concept, an idea? What about the actual man of the hour? Death as a guy? Death has basically always existed in video games, being a dying of dysentery in the Oregon Trail, all the way to accidentally diving headfirst into the ground in Breath of the Wild. Both are noble ways to go. But is there a way to do death right in games? Can it be done accurately or respectfully? Does it need to be either of those things? If you die in a video game, do you die in real life? These are all questions that may or may not be answered in the next few minutes. I've played a lot of video games about death. I've died a lot in games, and I've also played a few games where I am death, destroyer of worlds. So I think I've got a good idea of what it's all about. Unfortunately, my only blind spot on the topic is that I've never actually died in real life before, but that's a task for much, much later in my life. I also have the pleasure of being joined by someone who's also done all of those things, except for that last one, of course, and also happens to have her very own newsletter all about the topic of death. Joining me to chat today is award-winning journalist and my good friend, Steph Panicasio.
Hello, Steph. How are you today?
Hello. I am good. How are you?
yeah, good. Just kind of, I was about to say, just tired. What a terrible way to start a podcast. Yeah, for like shit.
Yeah, look, I mean, just creeping to the weekend.
Oh, yeah. TGIF, by the way.
Mm, absolutely. And now yeah, we get to have spooky bitch hours, so
I know. That's something. And it's so funny because the last episode, which was with Chantel Ryan, was also a spooky episode. And I feel like I'm starting to do like a little bit of a pattern. Like not all of the episodes are going to be spooky. I would argue that this episode probably isn't even that spooky because, like, I mean, look, death is scary.
Spooky is a frame of mind. So, yeah. Death can be scary. Death is also not scary. Death happens anyway, even if you're scared of it or not. So,
it's just a part of life.
Sure is.
It's just nature, you know, nature doing its work. I'm terrified of it. I'm terrified of death, actually.
Are you really?
And it's so so scared. One, because I think it's going to happen to me all the time. And two, because I'm too busy.
Yeah, if it could just wait until the opportune moment, that would be great.
Absolutely. Like I'm like, you know what? If it happens when I'm like old and done, so fair, so fine.
Yeah. But oh, like, look, I mean, I'm similar. For someone who makes a lot of jokes of like, kill me, I don't want to.
Yeah.
It would not be good.
like I'm moving right now. And actually, by the time that this comes out, I'll be in my new place. But like right now in the moving time, I want to die. But do I actually want to die? Not really.
Yeah. Plus then you've got so much shit that you haven't unpacked. Like it would be really inconvenient. Yeah.
It'd be just put you so in one of the boxes. Yeah. Or just like smush myself under one of them. But then like it like if I die, then who's gonna unpack my boxes and pay my rent? You know?
Yeah. So
it's
true.
It's a quite a funny thing. And speaking of death, so you do a newsletter called Tell the Bees, is that right?
Yeah, I sure do.
Yeah. And so it's about death.
It is. It doesn't sound like it from the whole bees element, but it is very much related to and encompassing all things about death.
Well, where does the Tell the Bees kind of title come from? Is that something like a motif related to death?
Yeah, it's kind of it's folkloric in origin. And basically the folklore is that a long, long time ago, people would, whenever there was like a birth or a death or a marriage even, they would keep the bees in the loop because, as we all know, bees are notorious gossips and they want to know everything that's going on. But when it came to death, if you didn't tell the bees about it, you would have shit bees. They would be
sorry.
they would get shit honey. They would not produce. It would be like a curse kind of thing. So you always had to keep the bees in the loop.
Yeah, that's that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I guess, like, sure. You know, for a society very reliant on honey, like,
yeah,
it makes
bees
sense.
Bees are important, man. Like,
but bees are important to everything. Around. Yeah. Exactly. They keep the world alive. So anybody who's allergic to bees, honestly, like, fuck you for being so intolerant because bees, we need them.
It's hateful. And I really love bees in general, and I've always wanted to get a bee tattoo, but I've never actually been stung, and it would be the funniest thing if I got the tattoo and then it turned out I was deathly allergic.
I've never been stung either. Yeah, can you imagine? Like, I mean, it would
be we're a friends bit to funny. The bees. They're not going to sting us. They sense the vibe.
I was in Croatia a number of years ago on an island in Croatia, and on this island, there were bumblebees, and I had never seen bumblebees before because we don't have them in Australia. And I remember just fawning over them because they were so big, but they were so fluffy and so cute. And I just, this, how do they exist? How do these cute little creatures exist? Because I hate bugs. I'm so scared of bugs. So it's like,
me too.
I see bumblebees and I'm like, you're not a bug, you're like a little friend to me.
I love that there's I think it's a quote somewhere where someone was like, technically the bee shouldn't be able to fly, but it does it anyway because it doesn't know that it shouldn't be able to, or something like that. And I respect that.
Is it Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? No, maybe. It's Bee Movie.
No, Bee Movie.
You like jazz?
Oh, no. It's Bee Movie. That is literally how Bee Movie starts.
Fuck.
How profound.
Oh, man. A classic of the genre.
Of course, of course. Of all the Bee Movies, Bee Movie stands out as the most Bee Movie, you know?
Yeah, it's as Bee as it gets.
It really is. But outside of bees, your user letter is about death, and it's all about death, in fact. So where did your fascination with the topic of death kind of start?
Well, I was very fortunate in that I didn't really experience a lot of death firsthand when I was growing up. I still have most of my grandparents, and I didn't really have lots of personal experience. But the first actual personal experience that I had was our family cockatiel. And I remembered going home from school, and I was the only person there. And unfortunately, the poor thing, RIP, had carked it, and it was lying at the bottom of the cage. And it was my first experience seeing anything like that that wasn't on film or like an exaggerated cartoony kind of version of it. And
yeah.
I remember like freaking the hell out because I was thinking, what the hell am I going to do? I don't want to touch it. I don't want to do anything about that. And I had a conversation with my parents about it, and they were like, look, this is what happens. It's going to be something that you will deal with a lot. And that kind of like itched the part of my brain that's like, okay, we're going to think about this for the rest of our lives. It's going to happen a lot. I'm going to deal with this all the time. Okay, I need to know everything about it. So I began looking into it a little bit more. And when I was older, I read a book by Caitlin Doughty. I've never actually said her name out loud. Sorry, Caitlin. You're the best.
Is
I love
it,
you.
Is it like a D-O-H?
D-O-U-G-H-T-Y. Doughty?
Doughty.
Doughty. Doughty.
Sounds right.
And it was her autobiography, which is called Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Other Tales of the Crematorium, which was fascinating to me. And I ate that shit up. And it became my entire personality very, very quickly. And I started like building a collection of creepy death books. And for a brief moment, I was like, I could be a mortuary science person. I could learn about that sort of stuff. But then I realized you needed to know chemistry and maths, and that immediately ruled me out. So I then was like, okay, well, I want to learn about it in a more cultural and sociological sense. And I just read as much as I could about it. And now I have like a whole bank of weird death knowledge that was sitting there going to waste in my brain. And I figured I'd get it out because a lot of people don't really talk about it. And if they do, they're freaked out, and it's considered a really taboo subject. And I've always liked, especially through my work, being able to destigmatize, I suppose, those sorts of conversations, because especially with something like death, it is healthier to have the conversations.
Yeah. Oh no, that's totally right. I feel like if I talked about death more often, I probably wouldn't be as scared of it. I think I'm just like, it comes from paranoia, I'll be real. But that is very interesting, isn't it? Because I mean, there's what's the saying? There's only two confirmed things in life, and it's death and taxes. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's not right, but it's close, right?
It's two inevitabilities.
There we go. Mm. And I would argue that death is the only one that is inevitable because there was a point where taxes didn't exist. So
true.
Got them, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
got their ass.
More fool to that guy who said that.
Yeah, what an idiot. of course, this is a video game podcast, if not like a video game adjacent podcast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, squeezing and squelching the topic of death into the video game world as much as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. Why don't we start with, have you ever died in a video game?
Absolutely, I've died in a video game. I'm very good at dying in video games. In fact, I'd say it's a special skill.
I would say the same of me. And it's I think a funny thing with being woman in the video game world. Like, well, first off, like, being a woman.
This could go anywhere. Absolutely.
It could. It could. But a woman in the video game world is like this kind of innate need to prove yourself. And I've kind of fallen comfortably into the fact that, like, you know, I play games and I'm a girl, but I'm not good at them. And I'm not going to pretend like I am. Ever.
And you don't have to. You can just enjoy it. That's the point.
If they're fun. Am I good at them? No. Do I win? No. Sometimes I am good at them. Mm. And then I'll immediately make it everyone's business, you know? But I do die a lot. I die a hell of a lot. That's dying in a video game. We've both experienced dying in video games. But then there's the topic of games that kind of handle death as a topic, right? So I've got a few.
Than you think.
There are so many. There are so many, and there are some that are quite well known, and then some that aren't super well known. And like, I think I've played enough that I have a good sense of, like, when it's done right.
Mm.
Kind of, I think. Like, I played Spiritfarer, right?
Oh, I love that game.
And I thought it was a really, really beautifully done kind of representation of moving on.
Mm.
And, oh, God, it feels like hard.
It is probably one of the best depictions of acceptance for that. Mm. And also just, I mean, the layers in it, it's stunning.
Oh man, a visually very beautiful game, and then emotionally very beautiful as well. It's amazing. And then there's Before Your Eyes, and I think Before Your Eyes does a great job because it doesn't just deal with death in a very good way, but it also deals with life in such a beautiful way. And I think that coming hand in hand is what makes both of them thrive, you know?
Yeah.
I remember playing that game for the first time and not fully understanding what was going on, and like I was like trying to keep my eyes open and move stuff around because I was doing it with the webcam, right?
Oh yeah.
And I was like like holding my eyes open
because
I didn't want my life to go by too quickly. But God, that's beautiful, right?
Just the ideas behind it and how they come to be is just it's so creative that it makes me almost angry, because it's just like, I couldn't do anything like that. It's so beautiful, and I'm so glad that they did, but also, you know, a little bit of rage at just how it's like when you see something really cute and you want to squish it, it's that same instinct of like, this is so good, I'm so angry.
Oh yeah. And it's just like such like a novel idea as well, like taking the literal phrase of like, your whole life flashes before your eyes, right? And life comes at you fast, you know?
Yeah.
Taking those and going like, what if you went through life, every stage of your life, in just like a blink? Like, that is in the blink of an eye. Like, that's so cool, you know?
It's so cool. It's such an interesting mechanic.
Absolutely. And I feel like if anybody's going to know this game, it's going to be you. Have you heard of Little Miss Fortune?
I haven't.
Oh.
Am I going to be introduced to something that's going to change my life?
I feel like it. I feel like it. Yeah. It's a short game, and I quite liked it. So Little Miss Fortune is you can call it a point and click adventure. You can like move around with the you know, arrow keys and the joystick. I almost forgot what a joystick was for a sec. You can move around like that, but it feels like at its core, it's a point and click adventure, right? Mm. And you play as Little Miss Fortune, who's this play as, hard to say.
Okay.
Hard to say if you play as her or if you just follow her, right? You play as Little Miss Fortune, this very, very sweet little girl who just seems to have the worst luck. and bad things keep on happening to her. But it's up to you to kind of lead her in the right direction and make sure, you know, she doesn't hurt herself. And going in the wrong direction, doing wrong things, kind of results in many different deaths for her. So, like, you have to be real careful. But as well, she kind of goes through the game coming face to face with different kind of representations of death. It's quite an alarming game, but very good.
It sounds so far up my alley.
I'm surprised you haven't heard of it. It's fantastic.
I'm literally going to add it to my list right now.
No, please do, because the end is fantastic as well. I you got to play it, is okay. What I'm saying. You got to play it. Well, Little Miss Fortune is really fantastic.
The rest of my evening is sorted.
Easy. And then I feel like you're definitely not going to have heard of this one.
Okay.
Because it's in my list of browser games that I like to collect. I have a collection of browser games, sometimes on itch.io, sometimes on Newgrounds and shit, that I just like to have my little collection of and then tell people about them every now and then. Have you ever heard of Goodbye Doggy?
No, but it sounds like it's gonna break my heart.
Yeah. 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 Oh. Yeah. So you play as the ghost of a family dog.
Oh.
And you've just died. And so it is up to you to go around the house and do little puzzle type, like one thing leads to another type puzzle situation, to essentially help your family move on and grieve and go through the process of grief, and then ultimately come together and support each other after your death. And it's fucked up. it takes like 15 minutes to play. And I think it was one of the best representations of kind of ghosts and the death of a pet.
Yeah. See, I don't get particularly overwhelmed nowadays if I see the death of like a human character, because I feel like, especially in games, we're so desensitized to death, because it's not really death. It's not, unless it's a permadeath game, it's really just a pause, if anything.
Mm.
But animals, man, that would fuck me up.
Ooh. Yeah, animals is hard. Mm-hmm. Animals is hard because it's like, you know, they don't know what's going on.
They don't deserve that.
They don't know. They don't know what's happening. But Goodbye Doggy, really nice, because like it's just you flying around this like cut down. So like it's cut open, so you can see the inside. You can see all the rooms, and you have to like help the mum do this or show the daughter this, and all of them kind of like better for the little actions you make as a little ghost doggy. It's really nice.
It's so cute.
So Goodbye Doggy, that's a fantastic one. And it's funny because I feel like death is a concept, not the death of a character, but death is a concept in video games, I feel like has always been done really well by indie games, very specifically.
Yes. I 100% agree. I feel like as a kind of like thematic presence, death has always kind of found its home in the smaller niche areas. And I mean, don't get me wrong, like as we know, all of the big games have death in some capacity, but is it for the sake of having death, or is it actually as a important element of the narrative and the structure of the game? And indies are the ones that have the capacity to really delve into that so much more.
Hey guys, Editor Ruby here. Just a bit of a spoiler warning. This next part contains spoilers for Red Dead Redemption 2, The Last of Us 2, Telltale's Walking Dead, and Final Fantasy VII. Why? Absolutely. Like if you let's say hypothetically, go into the saddest deaths in video games lists, of which there are millions and trillions so of many. Because let me tell you, SEO loves that shit. And yep. with them, they're all from big games because it's I feel like the saddest deaths in video games is like a joint experience. Everybody remembers when this character dies or this character dies. It's a joint experience, but it's all from the big games because I feel like it's what makes them the saddest is that so many people experienced that, right? And so many people fell in love with that character and then watched them go.
Especially because it's unexpected a lot of the time in the bigger ones. To a degree, you kind of expect that in a really dramatic moment, it's touch and go for some people, but if you're just playing along and then it really surprises you, which I find is a lot of the ones that dominate those lists, that's hard hitting.
Oh, yeah. I feel like if we have a look at any of these lists, which I'm looking at now, and a lot of them have repetition, right?
Yeah.
Shocking that some of them seem to be very similar to one another. Wow. Who'd have thunk it? But
wild.
One that I think is very... I'd agree with that it is sad and shocking and also, like, not something that's done in video games a lot is your character that you're playing dying at the end and that being the plot. You die at the end and that is the end. And that's exactly what Red Dead Redemption 2 does with the death of Arthur Morgan. Right? And so what, it was tuberculosis, is that right? Did you play Red Dead 2?
I haven't played it all the way through, but I know what happens anyway because it's just, my special interest. I think, is it tuberculosis? Maybe.
I'm pretty sure.
Why not?
It's a rough way to go. And it's a rough way to go.
But it's not great.
It's a cowboy's way to go, you know, I feel.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
But that was really interesting because, like, it's the thing of you die in video games and that's just kind of what happens, but you don't really die. You always come back. But the end of that game, and so I'm going to add a spoiler warning right there. I mean, it's been a while.
It has.
We've all heard of it now. But
it's been on Twitter.
Right.
Or X or whatever the fuck it is now.
I'll do a little spoiler warning anyway. But like it's rare for a game to just be like, you are dead. And that is canon.
Yeah.
And they did it in, I'm trying to think of other games. BioShock?
The one that really got me emotionally and it did that was Telltale's Walking Dead.
Oh.
That emotionally destroyed me for the longest time because I remember playing it for the first time while I was staying at somebody else's house and they had gone to sleep and I was playing it. It was probably about like 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm sitting there sobbing in this other person's house and they're like, ah. And just sitting there after it happened, after having to basically get Clementine to make this impossible choice, it was just, oh man, I was ruined after that.
Oh yeah, it was. Oh, and I think what how what hit really hard with Lee dying is like, and the difference with Arthur Morgan. And it's funny because didn't the first Red Dead do that too? Your character dies at the end. That's also, am I right? Like, I'm at pretty this point, sure that's
just, it's just a staple of the game.
Yeah. I mean, dead's in the title, so I guess it makes sense that they're just like, and you're dead, and that's the end of the game.
Bye.
The end. So long now.
Roll credits.
But with Lee, I guess what was different about it was like, yeah, you played him the whole time, but once you do die at the end, you see someone actively mourning you, and that's someone that's been around the whole time, and you essentially gave your life for. And being kind of a part of that whole sequence of Lee dying and Clementine mourning him is rough. It's incredibly well done, but it's rough.
And I feel like especially with that game, because you are so involved with the narrative choices, it is particularly personal feeling as well. Because like you're the one that's gotten yourself there. Obviously the game is getting you there to the end, but because you're making decisions like that, it just feels like you are so much more responsible for what happens.
Ooh, yeah. But like, it doesn't feel like you've done anything wrong as well. It's kind of like a thing of like, oh, that's what was supposed to happen. Like Telltale's Walking Dead is very much like your actions, you know, decide everything you do. Like your choices matter, right? But with the death of Lee, like that's just how it is. Like
it's inevitable.
That is, yeah, just like death. Makes you think, you know?
Happens to all of us at some point.
Crazy how
really,
life works.
We're all just constantly dying, just some of us more slowly than others, creeping towards death.
And, you know, hurry up. No, don't actually. That's wrong. But then there was also, you know, deaths that people fucking hated and didn't kind of believe at first. And I think the two big glaring ones there have to be Aerith in Final Fantasy, where people genuinely thought it was a bit and that she'd come back.
Just a fake out.
A fake out. And that didn't happen. She dead. Like
gone. Goodbye.
Gone. And Last of Us 2.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. That Last of Us was one of the games that I encouraged my dad to play when he first started getting into things as a 60-year-old retiree. And when he played through that sequence, he got so mad at me for not giving him a heads up for it because he was like, this is bullshit. I've spent this entire first game dealing with this. And he was also particularly unimpressed about the golf club element because he quite likes golf and is like, well, it's ruined it for me. I was like, oh, sorry. Ruined the game and golf. Golf's good name
you ruined
has been
golf.
Denigrated.
Fuck. God, that's good. Oh, man. See, I remember when everyone was getting mad about The Last of Us Part 2, being like, why would they kill Joel? That's so fucked up. I was like, well, one, you don't play him anymore. And two, like, they get to choose how the story goes. It's just a part of the story. It sucks. It's sad. Oh, it's sad.
It's sad, but it's also narratively inevitable as well. It has to... I mean, for Ellie to be able to get to the point that she's at, had to happen.
And what about all the nameless characters that appear in The Last of Us that died? That, you know, just got killed dead. That, you know, you don't care about. And it's like, of course, it's because you build this love and appreciation for Joel through his relationship with Ellie. I totally get that. But isn't his death just as inevitable as the NPC? And I think The Last of Us Part 2 also did that really well because when you attack somebody, when you kill somebody, their cronies mourn them.
Yeah.
Like they cry.
There's like a, I don't remember the name of it, but there is a kind of phenomenon where if you're dealing with a character that has a name, that is a named character, you will feel more for them than you will for nameless characters just by default, because psychologically you have that, like, this is this person. They are an entire human being. They have, you know, wants and dreams, and they have a favorite food and all of that kind of shit. So when you're going around and mindlessly, like, shooting people that have, like, essentially they're faceless as well as nameless, because you're not going to mourn them as they go, but having the other people around them do that, even if you don't know their name beforehand, when they're, like, crying out, like, oh, Steve, no, then you're like, oh, fuck, I killed Steve. What did I do that for?
You're like, oh, my God, oh, no, were they important? It's like, even if they weren't, they had a name.
Everyone's important. Steve Everybody's is important.
And I think Last of Us 2 was one of the few games to kind of make that happen.
Yeah.
When you kill somebody, you kill somebody. Like, it's not just, like, an NPC is going to, like, walk up to them and then walk over them and spot you. It's like, I'm coming for you. No, they see this, the dead body of their friend, and it affects them. They're like, oh, God, no. And, like, I've never seen that in a game before. I thought that was so cool, you know?
It adds such an element of realism, because, like, even if you are happening to be in a shootout in the middle of the snow trying to save your life from zombies, which, you know, happens all the time, you still have that mental and emotional connection to the people that you're with. So it would be wild, and it is wild to consider the fact that so many games don't show that connection and are just like, well, this is bad guy one and bad guy two, and they have no connection to each other ever.
Yeah. Like, it's not realistic.
No.
And, you know, gamers want realism in their games.
Absolutely they do.
Unless it's someone they like dying.
Yeah. And when that happens, it's a fake death. It's not real. He'll come back.
Sure. Right? Right?
Yeah. Shit.
Fuck. Now, there are so many ways to look at death in video games, you know. Like, and I didn't think there were at first. And then while I was writing my little thingy for it, there's so many. Like, we can look at death as a game mechanic, for example. Mm-hmm. And it shows up in a lot of different games. But I think the two most interesting ways I'd like to talk about is roguelites and a very specific puzzle game. I was about to say puzzles, but I'm like, no, a very specific
just
puzzle game.
One specific one.
One puzzle game. Because, like, you know, you can talk about death as a concept, death as a character, which we'll get to later, death as a motif in the story, as a story continuer. But death as a game mechanic is such a huge part of roguelites. And you've got that in Hades, I think, is a really fine example. And I think it kind of gets away with it as well, because you're a god, right? Yeah. You're a demigod. A demigod is
demigod,
Yeah.
He's the son of a god.
Yeah, you're the son of a god, so you don't really die, but you do get sent right back home, and home just happens to be the underworld.
I really thought you were going to say, but you do get wrecked.
You do get wrecked. And then you get sent back home to Papa, who's like, nice freaking try. Nice try. You never leave this place.
Yeah, no.
That don't impress me much. But it's a cool thing of, like, death almost being like a reward, or getting rewarded for death, which I find really fascinating.
It is, like, it's one of those things where, as I said, it's unless it's permadeath, you don't really see death represented properly. And in those particular games, it's always really interesting, because it kind of helps you to get better and avoid death in future. So I find it's also very similar with Elden Ring and basically just any Souls game, because after you've done it once and you've died, you then have, like, better ability to strategize for different things. And with Hades, you have different weapons now, you have different capacity to target those things. So really the game both incentivizes and decentivizes dying, because you don't want to in the end, but you do so that you can get to the point where you won't.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting as well because like it's this thing of, you know, you don't get rewarded like fully. It's like a very it almost desensitizes you to it because you have to keep on dying over and over and over. Like you don't have the option of just clearing it in one go. Like you have to die. And you gotta
unless
keep
you're
on
like
going
really good. But yeah, I'm not.
But I don't believe that anybody is.
Can't
and
really.
I'm not.
No.
So yeah, it's
and if
it's
you are, you're a liar.
Yeah. Liar. Not real. Not real. That man is not real. I shouldn't make fun of her. She seems nice.
Hope she's doing well.
Hope she's okay. But
yeah.
I think another one as well, which is really good, is Vampire Survivors, of course. I feel like that was an insane phenomenon. Like people went absolutely nuts over it, myself included, because it did the roguelite thing so simply.
Yeah.
And like you die, but boy, do you get so many rewards while you live and then after you die. Ooh. Feels fantastic.
And also vampires, just in general. Always a
and
winner in my
vampires.
Books.
Vampires. Even though there weren't any vampires in the game, it was like Vampire Survivors.
Mm.
I loved it. And so I mentioned this singular puzzle game. It's called Over My Dead Body. It's another browser game. It's another browser game. Oh, and I gotta mention, because you know, I don't wanna be the person who like references something and then doesn't pay my dues, you know? So Goodbye Doggy was made by Picogram. Mm-hmm. So shouts out. Picogram on itch.io. You can find that game. It's really good. Over My Dead Body is a game done by Feature Creep. And death is not the end when you're the subject of a cloning experiment gone wrong. Since the bodies of your previous clones remain after death, you can use them to reach new heights, literally, create safe passages, or shield yourself from bullets. Think of it as a twisted game of Tetris, except the blocks are your own lifeless corpses.
Good.
I played this game randomly last year and thought it was so neat. So neat. Because it's a pretty simple platformer. But like you gotta die, you have no choice but to die, because if you don't die then you can't get from A to B. And I think
so
that
you have to die strategically.
Yeah, you have to choose the exact right place to die, and you're given that through, you know, obstacles that will kill you, but then also eating a cyanide pill, and then you can just die in a certain spot and then you're dead there, and then you can get from A to B. And that was very, very cool. I loved that game. Very short, but short and sweet, you know?
I feel like there's something very, like, confronting about the idea of you may not realize that you're a clone until you die, and then you're confronted with all of these clones of yourself, and you're like, well, waste not. I'm
yeah,
going to
well,
make
I,
use of this.
I should probably use this to the best of my abilities. Have you ever played any games that you found have used death as a mechanic quite well?
I would say, I mean, I did a piece a while ago for CNET that was talking about Elden Ring specifically, which I remember having a discussion with somebody who was playing right when everybody was like, oh my God, it's so impressive, blah, 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 that didn't realize that the death element was such a like forward-facing element of it. They were like, yeah, of course I die. I die all the time. I was like, yeah, but do you think about it? Do you think about what it's doing and the mechanics of it? Because ultimately, like, I remember reading an interview with Miyazaki. I think it was in, like, The New Yorker or something, and he was talking about hang on, I'll see if I can find it. Okay. The quote was, death and rebirth, trying and overcoming. We want that cycle to be enjoyable. In life, death is a horrible thing. In play, it can be something else. So it was going into it with a whole perspective of, okay, well, the death element is so important to this. But people were just fucking around and killing things without thinking about it. And I think that was one of the ones that really struck me, because I think about that shit. I go into it, and if I see a death in a TV show, I'll be like, well, this is what I think has emotionally and strategically happened as a result of this death, because that's the way that my brain works, for better or worse. And playing that game really kind of struck me with it at all in that capacity. But I think other than that, the main one would be like Spiritfarer.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Big time. And last but not least, I'd like to talk about death as a guy.
As a guy. Just or a girl. Fun little dude. Yeah. A person. Or an animal.
Yeah. And so the Reaper is a common motif in every form of media, you know. Like there's been a movie with the Grim Reaper in it, there's been a TV show with the Grim Reaper in it, there's been a book, there's been a picture,
just been one, a comic book,
one of each. Yeah, so yeah, it's up to you to decide which one that is. And then others will cease to exist.
Yeah, the supreme one.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the first time I ever saw the Grim Reaper in a form of media. And I think it was a video game. No, that's a lie. It was The Simpsons.
Wow. Yeah. You are such a liar.
What?
How could you? You're such a liar.
How for saying you? Video games?
Yes.
It's because I misremembered, because I was like, oh, it was definitely The Sims as a child.
Well, I mean, Simpsons, not that far off. I'll forgive it.
Exactly. They're close. Yeah. Too close. Because I saw Homer as the Grim Reaper, and that was an episode that stuck to my mind, right? But The Sims, I remember coming face to face with the Grim Reaper in The Sims was such a harrowing experience, because usually it would be because someone in your family has died, and you have the option to like beg for their life, which is, as a child, I was like, okay. All right. This is
stressful.
Guess I've got to do this. Stop trying to go to the toilet.
Yep.
Beg.
Piss your pants and say please.
Yeah, literally. I think that was the first time I saw the Grim Reaper in a video game. But since then, I've got to experience quite a few. Hands down, though, I will say my favorite game where I have played as a Reaper has been Death's Door.
Yeah.
That is just an incredible piece of media.
It's so good. The first time that I played it, I was on a red-eye flight, so I had to be quiet while I was playing it, and I was getting so frustrated because, again, I'm not good at games, so it took me a while, and every single time that I would die, I'd be like, ugh, and I'd have to, like, really push that urge down so as not to disturb the very many sleeping people surrounding me on this plane. And it was hard.
Yeah. It was
very hard to do that. Especially because then when I would finally succeed, I couldn't celebrate in the manner of which I would normally do, which is to yell really loudly, fuck yes, and then just move on with my life.
Yeah. I totally get that. I totally get that. I was bad at it. I was bad at it. But I got good eventually. And every time I did well, I felt like I was really good at video games. And that felt good, you know.
And you deserve that.
Do you have a certain game that comes to mind when you think of death, the guy?
The guy? I mean, I feel like there are a few examples. I mean, the immediate ones that come to mind for me are things like Grim Fandango, even Little Reaper, which is an indie game. It's a platformer where you play as like a really, really little Grim named Ollie. It's so cute. He has like anime eyes. And then one that I really like because it's just a different way, and it also explores one of my favorite kind of historical representations of death, is Felix the Reaper. Have you heard of Felix? Felix, my good bud.
Yeah.
I really love Felix the Reaper. So, I mean, for context, if anybody hasn't played Felix the Reaper, it's a 3D puzzle game, and you play as this bureaucrat, basically. There's a lot of bureaucracy when it comes to representations of death. I don't know, I guess we're saying like bureaucracy bad, business bad, all of that kind of shit, but Sure. You play as Felix and you are in love with somebody from the Ministry of Life while you work in the Ministry of Death. So you go around and have to do all of these, like, set up these situations to kill people because that's your job. But the thing that I really love about that game so much is it was inspired by a historical concept called Danse Macabre. Have you ever heard of Danse Macabre? It sounds really much better in French. basically, it was like, it's a late Middle Ages, I think like 13th or 14th century allegorical thing that was happening in art and poems and stuff like that, where it was talking about the universality of death and depicting that by having everybody dancing with skeletons, which is A, great, but because you'd have like, you'd have a depiction of the Pope dancing with skeletons because everyone dies, even the Pope. But the reason that it's inspired by that is because every move that Felix makes is just him having a bit of a boogie. Like, he has his headphones on, so you're like making him breakdance his way to cause your accidental death. And it's just a really amazing thing. And like the concept Danse Macabre has been something that has kind of ended up in a lot of modern art in general without people necessarily realizing that that's what it is. And like, there's a, I mean, okay, here's an example for you. There is a piece of music. It's like an orchestral, I think it's called a tone poem or something like that. I don't really, I'm not an orchestra gal. And it's called Danse Macabre. And that piece of music is used in so many things that it's in Shrek the Third. And so you can essentially draw a straight line from medieval representations of death to dancing is a sin to Footloose to Shrek the Third and now Felix the Reaper. Incredible. And I just fucking love that.
That is amazing. That's beautiful. And that is also all the time we've got. So thank you so much for joining me on the show today, Steph. How can people find your shit?
Well, on most social media, I am simply just my name, which is at Steph Panicasio, spelled like window pane Casio watch for people who are confused. I have to say that every time I'm on the phone and somebody's like, what? And then if you want to subscribe to my newsletter, it is Patreon, Tell the Bees, and I would love to see that. We talk about every, I say we as if it's more than just me. I talk about at length all of the different factors around death, including like the cultural, the ritual, and also like the scientific. If you want to know what will actually happen to you when you die, I'm your gal.
Yeah, awesome. And I mean, like, can you give us a little sneak peek? What happens after I die? I'm scared.
Well, it'll really depend on where you die, first of all, because environmental factors are a significant change for it. But generally speaking, I'm sure you would have heard of rigor mortis.
Rick and Morty, yeah.
Rick and Morty, yeah. You'll become that, absolutely. Pickle Rick time. no, so basically rigor mortis and assorted other mortises, so you have palimorgus, algamortis, those are basically the signifiers of death. So it'll just be different chemical changes that happen in your body. So over the course of like 72 hours or so, you will essentially, your blood will drain to wherever gravity is at its lowest. So if you're lying on your tummy, then the front of your body will be a little bit more purple and the back will be a little bit more pale. You'll be a bit stiff because of the rigor mortis. There's just a whole lot of like really obvious visual factors that comes in and you'll just be really bloody cold. But you will not have to worry about any of it because you'll be dead and it'll be fine.
So don't worry about it.
You'll be fine. It's honestly so fine.
The more you know. And a big thank you to you for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing, why not give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using? Better yet, why not give us a nice little review? We've got one review here from Devon4991 who said, yeah, yeah. And that rocks. So that, if you're like,
it says it all.
It says it all. So if you're liking what you're hearing, give us a nice little review, just like Devon. And if you really like what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting Back Pocket over on Patreon, where you can get access to our lovely Discord full of all sorts of buds. And if you support us at a certain tier, you can even get access to more audio content like this with a bonus ep every week on the Patreon. You can also find us on Twitch, where we've got our main live show every Thursday from 7 p.m. AEST, and on TikTok, where we are constantly posting very good stuff for you to cast your big, beautiful eyes on. And there's also the socials, a la X and whatever and whatnot, which you're also welcome to get around. But, you know, TikTok's where we're at, and Twitch and podcast stuff. So, once again, thank you so much for tuning in. And as my rotting corpse would say, bye.
Yeah, as Devin would say.
Yeah!
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.